The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Science of happiness. It seems like the most unscientific thing that you could possibly pursue.
Yes, happiness is fascinating. It's something everybody seeks, and yet it wasn't studied systematically until recently because people thought it was impossible to study it. So we've seen this huge growth in people studying happiness, trying to figure out, you know, what makes us happy, what keeps us happy, and what do we really understand about happiness. And that's what the book is about. It's about extracting from happiness science and all the research practical tips and strategies about how we can be happy, how we can make ourselves happy, how we can make other people happy. And the book is a guidance about doing that based on what we know from recent research.
Okay, now, if you're 47, you're going to be pretty unhappy. 47 years of age. It's the unhappiness year of your life.
I am 47, and this is what really prompted the book, because studies from hundreds of countries around the world show that we tend to start out life fairly happy as children. We get steadily more unhappy in our teens, 20s and 30s, and the low point is at 47, which is exactly where I am. But from this point on, it is likely my happiness will increase. And if I remain in good health, then in later life, my happiness might well be back to how high it was in childhood or even better. Now, the reason for the difficulty in the mid-40s is to do with work and, mortgages, or, you know, trying to get a mortgage and failing, or promotions and, the burdens of things like careers and families start to really kick in the 40s. And then as one moves beyond it, apparently one gains a great deal more perspective. One figures out what really matters, and then we become happier as we age.
Now, you also mentioned in the beginning of your book that women, in spite of economic progress and increasing social equality, gender equality, they're not particularly happier as a result of all of this, and that generally speaking, women are more depressed than men.
Well, yes, it used to be the case that women consistently rated themselves as happier than men rated themselves. But over the past 20 years, that has equalized, and men now, we rate ourselves a little bit happier than women rate themselves. And this coincides with so many social changes. Now, not enough social change, but you know, increased female participation in education, the workforce and so forth. But it seems that the main beneficiaries of this are not women, at least in terms of happiness. The main beneficiaries are men. And this appears to be because these additional roles for women are in addition to, you know, roles in the home, and there hasn't been an equalization. And, you know, the research strongly suggests that societies that support parenthood and more equitable sharing of the burden of family life make everybody happier, men and women alike. So there's some way to go on this. And what's really interesting is Ireland does poorly in terms of the happiness of parents compared to non-parents. In Ireland, non-parents tend to be happier than parents. And the reverse is the case in certain other countries like Portugal and Hungary, where parents are happier than non-parents.
I'm going to have a look at those countries now in a moment, but just a text from a News Talk listener called Margaret. The older I get, the more content I am, and I think mostly happier. I'm 59. The difference between happiness and contentment, Brendan?
Well, there are two models, if you like, of happiness. One is hedonism, the pursuit of pleasure and enjoyment. And the other is the other end of the spectrum is contentment and sort of feeling reassured about life. You know, it's the difference between following your favorite band across Europe for the summer versus saving up for a slightly better garden shed than you currently have. So as we go through life, we do tend to move a little bit away from the hedonism, the pursuit of pleasure and enjoyment in the moment, and more towards the contentment end of the spectrum. And we value that more. Now, we all need a balance of both. But some people, it's interesting to think about people like this, and indeed think about yourself, you know, to what extent is my happiness, does it come from pleasure in the moment? And to what extent is it to do with, you know, building a good career, saving for a pension, and all that kind of quieter stuff, but that also makes us happy.
Hmm. Now, if you want to go to a country to be happy, Finland is the number one. Number two is Denmark. Number three is Switzerland. Iceland is fourth. Norway is fifth. Then if you look at the United Kingdom, our nearest neighbour, they're in a 13th. We're not bad. We're 16th. We're better than the United States, which was 18th. If you live in China, you're the 94th happiest place in the world, which is not great. India comes in at 140. And the five unhappiest countries, starting with the unhappiness of all, Afghanistan, then South Sudan, Zimbabwe third last, Rwanda, and the Central African Republic. They're places you don't want to live if you want to be happy. But Scandinavia generally does well. Is that because they do tend to do things like childcare very well? They too do tend to have practical equality rather than theoretical gender equality?
They do. They have strong equality legislation, a strong ethos of equality, the very strong government, strong public services. Sometimes that equates into high tax as well. These are countries, the Nordic countries are consistently the happiest in the world, particularly Finland and particularly Denmark. As you say, Ireland, we do quite well in and around 15th, 16th, 17th always out of around 150 countries globally. We tend to give ourselves a score of around 7 or 7.1 out of 10 for happiness. And this doesn't change as much as you might expect over the years. We've actually gone up a place in the rankings globally over the past year. And we do rate ourselves as pretty happy. It's not entirely clear that if the whole lot of us moved to Finland in the morning, would we adopt, their level of happiness? we might drag them down.
We'd be complaining about their high taxes and we'd make them miserable. Up to 50% of our range of happiness is determined by our genes. We'll talk about that in a moment. Conservatives are happier than liberals. And having a baby increases your happiness level for only 2 years. So these are very worrying developments.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that they're of concern, but there's a lot that's positive as well. With regard to the politics, it is very consistent that having conservative political beliefs is associated with happiness. I think it's because people with more liberal or left-wing beliefs, they want to change the world, they see problems everywhere, they encounter a degree of frustration, and this leads to less happiness for them. There might, however, be other benefits with that political viewpoint, in that they might well indeed change the world and produce a better, happier world in the end, but it is at a small cost to their own happiness if they really become engaged in the struggle. And as regards the having of babies making someone happy for about 2 years, this is true for the first two babies or maybe three, and beyond that the happiness bump isn't quite as big as it might be. Now this doesn't mean that people should go and have a baby every 2 years forever, because that would result in a very large number of babies, which might diminish happiness in the end. But it does mean that children can bring happiness, and if we have good parent positive public policies, this can sustain that happiness for longer than the 2 years.
Now, there are lots of practical things in the book about how to improve your happiness, to do things, for example, to stay connected with people. All of these things are very interesting. Many experts will recommend mindfulness, but a lot of people don't have really much time for the idea of mindfulness. But you say, well, a lot of people do it and they don't know they're doing it. Watching a match, totally engrossed in the moment of the match, is, if you like, an exercise in mindfulness.
Yes, I'm very fond of mindfulness and meditation and that, but a vast swathe of the population just switches off when you start using these terms. So we achieve this in other ways. A really good example, and I do talk about this in the book as well, is going running, which is when someone goes out running and they get totally in the zone. There's just the sound of their feet on the pavement, the movement, their mind is clear, and the world melts away. That is a form of mindfulness. It's being in the moment, and it's very mentally healthy. And this is one of the things I recommend in the book. Another one is being a spectator at a match. You know, if you can think back to Croke Park being full of tens of thousands of people, everyone utterly focused on the game as if their lives depended upon it. All other aspects of their life are gone, all the problems, the worries about the future, the past, it disappears, and there is utter focus on the moment. And that too is very mentally nourishing, and that supports happiness in a really profound way. And during the pandemic, it's something we can all try and do, be it gardening, be it knitting, be it running, be spending time focused on an activity in the moment and let everything else fall away.
Well, the book is very, very interesting and very entertaining. The subtitle is Six Principles of a Happy Life and the Seven Strategies for Achieving It. So you can actually work on improving your happiness index on a personal basis. But finally, I should ask you about that 50% of your happiness depending on your genes. I mean, are some people born to be miserable?
No, there's a genetic element to nearly everything about us. But what it seems to do is give us a set point, and our happiness hovers around that. But it can go up and down, and we do have a great deal of control over our happiness, even with the genetic element, which is poorly understood. But we do have an enormous amount of agency and control. And in the book, I set out things about sleeping and dreaming and eating and moving and being and connecting to emphasize all that we can do to become a happier and more contented people. And particularly now that some of the clouds of the pandemic are certainly lifting, this is the time, I think, to just dream that little bit more and aim to be that little bit happier.
Well, the book is a hardback. It's called The Science of Happiness, subtitled The Six Principles of a Happy Life and the Seven Strategies for Achieving It. It's written by the Professor of Psychiatry at Trinity College in Dublin, Brendan Kelly, and is available, obviously, from all your bookshops. Order local, and it'll be delivered in jig time, and pretty soon, hopefully, the bookshops will be open. Brendan, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.